Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, sometimes known on weekends as Grundislav, and with me as always...
Hello, I'm the exact opposite. I am known during the weekends as Francisco Gonzalez, but during the week I'm known as Grundislav. But for the purpose of this podcast, I will be Ben 304. Hello.
I think that'll save us a lot of confusion. Yes, good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm good. Well.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, all's well.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. What have you been up to this week?
Nothing.
Neither have I. What a boring lot we are.
End of podcast.
Yes, goodbye. No, I've been up to some things this week.
Good. Like what? Tell me. Tell us.
Well,
tell Blue Cup Tools in participants as a whole.
Yes. Well, last night I attended the monthly indie developers drink night at Loki Bar or Loki Lounge in Brooklyn, New York. And it was a pretty good turnout. It was actually probably the best turnout. I've been going for about 3 months now, and this was my third time attending, and it was probably the best turnout we've had as far as quantity of people. Well, quantity and quality of people.
Okay.
None of the people there are going to be listening to this podcast, but whatever. Anyway, but yeah, it was good. I got to meet a bunch of people, got to see a bunch of people that I already knew, and we had a good time. We talked about cool stuff. Yeah, Anatoly Boyoing was there. Miranda Govan was there. Dave Gilbert sadly was not there because he was on a plane to Adventure X.
It's Adventure X this weekend. That's starting very soon, so good luck to them. Hope it goes really well.
Yeah, it'll have finished by the time this podcast makes it to the internet.
It will.
So hopefully...
Serves us right for being too organized and being a week in advance for their recordings.
Yeah, well, hopefully they won't have set fire to the venue or anything.
I doubt it. Yeah. They're adventure game fans. What's the worst they're going to do? Combine everything together?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Well...
This is concerning.
Yeah. But
anyway, hopefully it goes well.
Yeah, yeah, good. So that was that. And, yeah. So I've been working on my game. I went to a cafe a couple of times this week, and I sat there with Dave Gilbert for several hours, and I got quite a bit done on my game. I'm still setting myself a goal of having a fully playable build of the entire game by the end of the year, and I think I might be able to reach that goal. So
okay,
we'll see. Good. Yeah, good.
It seems to be coming along in a steady progression, so yeah.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
Plus, I mean, even though I'm going home for Christmas on the 17th, I'm taking my laptop, so I'm planning on filling the empty spaces with game work while I'm down.
Yeah, man.
There, so...
The laptops are fantastic. Yeah. I swear by them.
Man, I can work on my game on the plane. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Assuming there's like no snakes on it or anything, you know?
Well, you never know.
No, you don't. But at least with the laptop, I can draw some sort of a mongoose or something, and then the snakes will be afraid and go back into their seats.
Good luck.
Thank you. I'll have to draw a very realistic-looking mongoose.
I think you'll have to spend some time on it. Probably be easier to just avoid the plane with the snakes on it.
Probably.
Go with... Yeah.
I'll just be sure to not fly Snake Airlines.
Snake Air, yeah.
Even though they had the cheapest tickets.
Well,
probably a reason for that, but hey, maybe they just don't serve you food.
I've never actually seen snakes on a plane. Probably doesn't surprise anybody that's listened for long enough to know that I don't really watch films.
Well, you're not missing out on much, I'll be honest with you.
Well, are you kidding me? They called it Snakes on a Plane.
I know. That was the whole reason I went to go see it.
I know. Probably the same with everyone else.
I had a t-shirt of Snakes on a Plane, and now I don't have it anymore. Now my dad has it, and sometimes he calls me on Skype and he's wearing my Snakes on a Plane t-shirt, and it's amusing.
I have a t-shirt that says, I love Miami, but that's an absolute lie because I've never been there. I only know it from Vice City. Great t-shirt, though.
Yeah, well, I'm... Yeah.
Good.
Anyway, how have you been? What have you been up to?
I've been good. I've been working hard on Blackwell. It's all coming together. I know how it ends. I may have said that last podcast, but I know how it ends, which is a little weird because I was definitely a fan of the Black Wheel series before I was an employee of the Black Wheel series or a participant in a productive sense in the Black Wheel series. So yeah, it's kind of weird to see it all finish up, and we just the final touches are being put on the game. I think Dave just released the fourth alpha of the game, which means we're like super close to having it done.
Good.
So yeah, it's huge. Like compared to the other Black Wheel games, I'm like, man, there's so much stuff in this game.
Yeah,
so
I've gotten that impression.
I don't know how much longer it's going to be in terms of play length, but there's a lot of crap going on. So yeah. And I've been playing games and doing stuff. I've got another little project which I won't talk about just yet because it's still in the very early stages, but I got another little thing which is kind of an extension of DOS is good, so we'll see how that turns out, but I'm pretty excited about it. I got a bunch of people signed up to help out. And I'm excited about seeing what we can do with it. So yeah, working on games, playing games, talking about games.
The usual.
Yeah. And water skiing on Sunday.
Oh, well, there's something. Yeah, good.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah,
have you been playing much? I know. Just before we did this podcast, both you and I were playing a bit of Mega Man.
Yeah.
But have you been playing anything else other than that?
Yeah, well, I'm still plowing my way through Mega Man Unlimited, which is a fan-made Mega Man game. And it's really, really hard. It's like they took all the hardest bits of all the hard Mega Man games and just amped them up by tenfold. And it's not going to lie, it's kind of frustrating, especially now that I'm in the later stages. And if any of you played Mega Man 2, you'll remember Quick Man's stage with the lasers that kind of blasted the whole way and you had to memorize the patterns. And it was kind of trial and error. Well, there's a stage I'm currently going through right now that's like that, but on crack. And it's just completely terrible and unfair, and I hate it. And I've swore a lot this evening, as you heard.
I actually sung, for the listeners' pleasure, I sung the Angry Video Game Nerd theme to him while he was playing it.
Yeah.
There was that much swearing.
You did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I have to say that Mega Man X seems a lot fairer, except for the fact that I finally found the last upgrade, and I had myself all set up with, like, I found a sub-tank, and I found extra health, and I was ready to go and take on the final battle, and now my saves seem to have broken, so I'm going to have to do some fiddling around it and see if I can do that. Because, you know, I was like, yeah, I've pretty much done everything there is to do. It's time to go and finish this. And, well, that's life.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
I don't get frustrated that easily.
Good.
So, but I've really enjoyed Mega Man X.
Good.
So I'm glad it's not like the one you're playing, because it's actually very fair.
Well, because it was actually made by Capcom and not
People who had a good sense. Well, by that time, they'd made, like, 8 or however many Mega Man games, so they had a good sense of design and what's fair and what's rewarding.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Unlike this guy, obviously.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway.
Anyway. But aside from that, I actually just picked up a new game today. It's a very recent release. It's Broken Sword 5, The Serpent's Curse. Yeah. And I had heard, I was excited about it because, you know, I'm a fan of the Broken Sword series, and even though the third and the fourth one get some flack, I enjoyed them. I mean, they weren't as good as the first two. Well, the first one is always going to be my favorite, because I remember being slightly put off by the second one's kind of rushed ending when I played it back in 1997. And, three was all right, and four was but this one has been released and is being released in two parts, and I'd heard mixed reviews about that aspect of the game. Richard Cobbett and Ashton Reyes both commented on how it just kind of abruptly ends at the 50% mark, and it doesn't really it's all set up and no payoff and whatever. So I thought, well, I'll just wait until the second episode comes out and play it as a whole. But then I was looking at a trailer for it, and I was watching a little bit on YouTube, and I was like, you know what? This looks nice. So I figured I'd just bite the bullet and get it. So I did.
From what I've seen, it really seems to be the closest to Broken Sword 1.
It really is. I mean, it feels right. It feels like a Broken Sword game, and it's, you know, the fact that it's hand-painted 2D backgrounds with cel-shaded sprites.
The backgrounds look just sensational.
Yeah, it's a return to form to the first two games, definitely.
Especially Nico's apartment looks exactly like it did in the first one, just better.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they used the original sketch and just touched it.
Well, neither would I.
Because it's pretty faithful. But
I have to say, though, and I made this joke, I think it was to Ilyich the other day, that even though it looks like more like Broken Sword 1 than any of the other games. Quake 2 is probably more like Broken Sword 1 than Broken Sword 3 and 4 are. I mean, I like Broken Sword 3 up until that bit where it all just got stupid stealth stuff, and it turned into In Cold Blood 2.
Yeah.
With George Stubb as, like, Indiana Jones the second.
Yeah.
But I did like it up until that point, and then I just went, man, no. You know? But yeah, it's nice to see that Charles isn't completely crazy and sort of does remember what made his games great at one point.
Yeah, he definitely does. I mean, at this point, we're 5 games in, so, you know, the whole historical aspect of it is kind of... It still kind of feels like it's reaching for straws. Because, I mean, you had the Knights Templar in the first one, you had the Mayan, you know, thing in the second one. And then the third one, it was that Voynich manuscript, and that... It just didn't feel like it tied into the plot at all, because it ended up being the Templars again anyway. So it was like, yeah, you know, it was kind of like a MacGuffin. And then in the fourth one, it was the Lost Ark, which was just
Broken Sword 4 is kind of weird.
Yeah, and it's just, the ending is awful. But the funny thing about Broken Sword 5 is that it kind of acts like 3 and 4 never happened. It hasn't mentioned them at all yet.
So do a lot of the fans.
Yeah, that's true. It's mentioned... I mean, it's already got characters from the second one in it and the first one.
Sure.
And, you know, it's good to see them again, but it just has not acknowledged 3 and 4 at all, which is kind of amusing. Sure. But even like this, the sort of historical / supernatural thing in Broken Sword 5 is something to do with the Gnostic Gospels and some weird painting and... Right now, it's pretty much just solving a murder mystery. But
is it true that the supernatural stuff is all held off until the second episode, and it's just kind of more everyday crime-solving stuff in the first?
Well, that's what it seems to be so far. I've only gotten about 20% through the game, according to the save game. I'm 21% complete. And so far, yeah, it's totally just been solving a murder, crime-wise. Okay. And there's been one priest who's like, "The painting is evil!" But that's all about... That's about all we've gotten so far. So,
what is he making? A fan game to the Reaper and the Rebirth? I decided I'd hold off because I bought all the other Broken Sword games as complete games, so why would I buy Broken Sword 5 as a half game and then another half game? So,
well, you get both. I mean, once you pay for it, you get both as they release. And the advantage is that the second part comes out next month, so it's not like a, you know, it's not like a Telltale game that you have to wait 2 months.
It's a very odd decision to split it and then have them come out. The only thing I could think of is that they need the money.
Yeah.
That's the only justification that makes sense to me.
Yeah, same.
So, I don't know.
But whatever.
I hope that it's a return to form for them, because I think they have a lot of potential and that they've lost their way a lot. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. I can say that what I've played so far I've really enjoyed, and I feel it's a return to form, and I think it's, you know, it's a Broken Sword game. It feels like a Broken Sword game. And there have been a couple of puzzles which admittedly are kind of weird and kind of felt like they've been thrown in, but what adventure game doesn't have those?
Yeah, that was... Does it have a goat puzzle?
Not yet, but it has a cockroach puzzle, and that's all I'll say.
Have you heard about that puzzle that's in it?
Oh, you mean the cat hair one?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Clearly you have.
I have, but I haven't experienced it yet. And I have a feeling I know who it's going to apply to, but I haven't gotten there yet. No.
Well, I... Yeah. You know what? I hope that Jane Jensen's Mobius or something gets reworked so that all the characters have really, really short arms and there's crate-pushing puzzles. Just as kind of a revenge.
I hope that nobody in Mobius has a mustache, and the whole game is just the guy going around trying to get fake mustaches to fool different people. And
I'd go back in time and kickstart that if that was the case.
I'd go back in time and kick your ass if you did that, if that was the case.
I know. But yeah, I just I don't know. I sometimes think that Charles Cecil's lost the plot.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I don't know. The Broken Sword games weren't really all about an overarching plot anyway. It was just kind of like the will they, won't they, George and Nico thing, and then
yeah,
but some supernatural thing thrown.
But for you know, a company that had once had so much vision,
yeah,
you know, they just, I don't know whether they tried to push things in the wrong direction. I don't know. I made the comment to Ashton Reyes
the other day. They certainly pushed crates in the wrong direction.
Charles Cecil said that adventure game genre is dead, and he had to take that back a few years later.
Yeah.
When he was clearly proved wrong. I commented that Charles should have actually said that the adventure game genre is not dead, that their commitment to providing and fans with an actual adventure game experience rather than these half-assed action adventure weird things is dead.
Yeah,
because he wouldn't have had to take that back. But it's nice to see that he's kind of accepted the fact that he was wrong and gone, look, you know, let's try again.
I made a joke on Twitter as well. I believe it was Rebecca McCarthy, also known as Azure, who's a voice actress. She downloaded Broken
Sword. Hi, Rebecca.
Yes, hello. She's one of the organizers of Adventure X as well.
She sure is.
She tweeted something along the lines of, she had downloaded Broken Sword 5, and she was saying, oh, I'm going to play Broken Sword 5. Who said adventure games are dead? And I said, well, Charles Cecil, ironically.
He sure did.
So, there you go. And he's going to be at Adventure X, too, so... That'll be interesting.
Hi, Charles.
He doesn't listen to this podcast.
I think Steve Ince might be giving a video presentation over Skype there. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, man, Adventure X is getting like, it's good, it's good. It's nice to see it's growing.
Yeah, I wish I could have gone, but it was a little too pricey to go for a weekend.
It's a little too December for me, you know?
Yeah.
I think. I mean, I'd like to go, but it's a weird time of year.
It's not so much that it's a weird time of year, it's just the fact that it's one weekend, and flying to London is not cheap.
Yeah, everyone's going to want to go there because of Christmas and, you know, visit family and everything, so it's kind of hectic season.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. Good. But, maybe someday. Anyway, so yeah, have you been playing anything? I talked about Broken Sword. Have you played anything?
I've been playing mostly old games. I've been checking out some cool old games, some stuff I'd never played before, but not really. This week I've had my mind on other things after hours, so I haven't actually been playing that much. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you can keep a file of the things you're working on. I got you.
Let's move on.
Yes, let's move on. So there was
some... Before this turns into entirely in jokes.
You're right. anyway, so there was something I wanted to discuss this podcast.
Okay. I'm interested to hear what it is because I have no idea. And that's serious. We ad-lib these days. We don't really tell each other what we want to talk about. We kind of put each other into hot water.
Haven't we ad-libbed since day one?
No, we used to plan our podcast really carefully.
That's true. We did when we had all those extra segments and stuff.
Now we're lazy.
Yeah, but I think we're better off for it. Anyway.
Anyway.
So, I make adventure games, which might be surprised, but I do.
And I'm shocked.
You make adventure games as well.
I do, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, you do. And we're both adventure game fans, and we play adventure games.
I've played a number of them.
As have I. So, it's occurred to me that adventure games are all about, we've said several times in the past, adventure games are all about the story, all about the exploration, all about, they thrive on telling a story and letting you interact with the world, and etc., etc., etc. But if you boil it down, like someone said about music, that all songs are about, you can pretty much say that songs are about five things, you know, like, I lost my girl, or I got a girl, or I got a girl pregnant, or, like, you know, one of those. You can basically boil the subject of all songs down to basically five major archetypes.
Well, there's also blues, which is about waking up in the morning.
Yeah, and your dog dying and stuff like that. But anyway, adventure games...
Well, wake up in the morning and whatever happens, anyway.
Oh, sure, yeah. And you ain't got no shoes, because something that rhymes with blues.
Blue suede shoes.
Yes. Anyway, adventure games, similarly, can mostly be boiled down to archetypes as well. And it seems to me that the majority of adventure games are either investigation, of some sort, be it paranormal investigation or murder mystery investigation or alien abduction investigation.
Yeah.
Or fetch quests, in which case you pretty much spend the whole game picking things up and getting them for people, like King's Quest or something like that.
Okay, well, where would you say Day of the Tentacle fits in there?
Well, Day of the Tentacle... Oh, right, there's the third option, which is save the world.
Right, I was going to say, because that's...
Yeah.
That's...
Day of the Tentacle falls into save the... Yeah, so you've got save the world, you've got detective, and you've got fetch quest. And you don't really have too many other driving forces for the stories in adventure games.
Okay.
So you can rattle off a list of adventure games and you can pretty much put them in a category. I mean...
Oh, sure. You've got Discworld, which is save the world from the dragon. Uh-huh. You know, you've got obviously Gabriel Knight, which is investigate these murders that are going on. You've got Monkey Island, which is, I guess, save the world from LeChuck to an extent.
Well, it's Monkey Island's also... love story, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
That's another
one.
It
is.
Save the world or save the girl.
Yeah, damsel in distress.
Damsel in distress, yes. Monkey Island 2 is pretty much save or avoid the enemy, I guess.
Yeah, he's well, I guess it's kind of against the big
bad. It kind of goes into the fetch quest, too, because it's treasure hunt.
Yeah.
So, so pretty much all the big adventure games of the 90s and of all time can be put into these boxes, and it worries me Chandler, because on a very personal level, I'm making an adventure game which I feel does not fit into any of these boxes, and it worries me how the reception is going to be because it doesn't fit into these boxes.
Well, I think in your case We can. Well, I mean, you've said this yourself, that a Golden Wake is definitely a rise and fall story,
you know?
And I think the rise and fall story is somewhat common. Look at Grim Fandango, I guess. Well,
Grim Fandango is more get the girl. It's the love story. Get the girl.
Okay. I think the weirdest thing about the game you're working on, the thing that sets it apart from most games, is that it takes place over a really long time period, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something that you don't see very often. It's set over a course of, is it 4 years?
It's actually over 14 years.
There you go, 14 years. So it takes place over a really long time. And I'm not talking about, like, time-shifting mechanics in, like, Day of the Tentacle. It's a really long time period. So in your kind of case, I guess, I'm not really sure where it fits in there.
Well, but I think this isn't... Don't get me wrong. I didn't bring this up to be all like, oh, my game's different. It's great. I'm actually genuinely concerned about how it will play, you know, if against what's expected. Because, I mean, the driving force behind most stories is these things. You know, you've always got... No matter how much a game deviates in its story with the puzzles and whatever, you still have the main quest, the main detective story, the main...
Sure, the driving force.
The driving force is in my game is that this guy wants to succeed. And that's not really... I don't know. I can't think of any other adventure games where the character's sort of well-being is the end goal, you know?
I want to be a pirate.
Yeah, to an extent, but but I mean, I want to be a pirate. Okay, then he becomes a pirate, and then it becomes all about saving the girl.
Right, it goes into saving the world.
Right, or so he thinks.
Yeah, well,
I mean, look at you make games that are quirky and sort of off the beaten path, I guess you could say.
Hmm.
Let's look at some of the games you've made and see how we can fit them into this category.
Okay.
Let's talk.
Let's do it.
Let's start chronologically with
I have to say that that my games very much buck the trends whenever I can make them buck the trends.
Well, that's, you know, that's part of the reason that I wanted to have this discussion with you, because
okay,
you like to buck the trend, and you've made it work because your games are critically renowned. Award-winning, critically renowned adventure game developer Benjamin Chandler.
Please, please, before my already enormous ego bursts like the guy in Monty Python sketch, that one little last bit of praise will just explode me.
Yeah.
Please.
Anyway, so Shoot, I Got Abducted.
Which is my third game.
What was your first game? Your very, very
Hungry.
First one.
Hungry, you've never played.
I've never played Hungry, no.
My second game was Trans-Pacific.
Yes. Okay.
Which I made with Paul.
Right.
Dick Honey, which was definitely a save the world story.
Yeah, it was a save the world story from what I remember. It had to do with Ayers Rock.
Yeah.
Then you had Shoot, I Got Abducted, which was kind of a save yourself story, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I like to play around with the escape the room.
Well, okay. Thing, I guess escape the room, I guess, could be another box.
Yeah, but
no pun intended.
Shoot, I Got Abducted didn't really have a plot. It was just like, you've been abducted, get the hell out of there, and let me throw in some weird social commentary and fart jokes while I'm at it.
Always a good combination.
Well, you know how I am.
Yeah. Then Annie Android was sort of get the boy, wasn't it?
Annie Android was Get the Boy. It was a romantic comedy in which you save the world at the same time.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't so much save the world, but liberate it from the oppression of the machine state.
Okay. I don't remember that part at all.
Mixed with a quirky romantic comedy.
Okay.
That makes it sound way more complex and thought out than it really is.
Okay. And then you've got Shifter's Box.
Shifter's Box was next. Shifter's Box is, like a lot of my games, is more about the individual, you know. It was about Sally originally finding her way home and getting out of these weird worlds, but also gaining an appreciation for... it's a game made about a guy that had been stuck... made by a guy that had been stuck in the same sort of place in life for a long time, and he was kind of stuck in a rut, and he made a game about getting out of, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and learning to appreciate the world at large.
I see. Well, okay, that's a bit out of the box, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Actually, pun completely.
Well, yeah, my games were like that. But yeah, it was about I think the best thing that I ever did after making that game was watch a film called Spirited Away.
Hmm.
And after I watched Spirited Away, I was like, oh man, that's how I should have made it, because that really represents what I wanted to say with that story.
Mm-hmm.
To me. So yeah, it's about getting out from your comfort zone and experiencing the wonders of the world and appreciating them for what they are, instead of being like, man, I hate this, I want to go back to my bedroom and make computer games. So there you go.
Seems like it's, you didn't take your game's advice.
A lot of my games are me picking on parts of my personality that I dislike.
I see.
I'll say that right now.
Okay.
So yeah, I make fun of myself a lot. Mm. And try and turn it into a nice story. Anyway, let's move on.
Well, Heed.
Heed's about a second chance. I made that when I was brokenhearted. That's all there is to it.
Heed was really about discovery, I think, because you
it was about getting a second chance.
Okay. And
I was depressed and brokenhearted when I made that. In a very weird headspace, clearly.
You know, we've all been there. Ben Jordan.
Yeah.
Well, Ben Jordan was made it. Ben Jordan was created as a product of depression as well, so yeah. Anyway, moving on to what else? Awakener
was really honestly, Awakener was made as a proof of concept game so that Dan and Alexander had something to use as a conversion process for Zage. The
okay.
fact that lots of people like it is weird to me, because it's tiny. The fact that it got in that indie games book is really, really weird, because I'm like, man, of all the games I've made, you chose this.
Yeah. And
I just wanted something that was a decent proof of concept.
Yeah.
So.
And
yeah.
Exclamation Mark?
Exclamation Mark was about me. Someone wrote a review of Annie Andrew. I think it was John Walker from Rock Paper Shotgun mentioned in his Shifter's Box review that he really didn't like the fact that Annie Android was about all this walking from room to room, and he gets really tiresome walking room to room. So I was like, fine, I'll make a game where you don't walk from room to room at all. All the rooms will be on the same thing. And it was about pushing limits, like defying limitations of the genre, like no inventory, only one mouse button. You know, it was really about pushing limits and pushing myself as a designer. But the story is totally a Save the World story.
Yeah, okay. That's true. It is.
So is Featherweight. Featherweight's more of a get-the-girl story.
That's true. It would be, wouldn't it?
Sorry. I'm falling into the tropes.
No, well, you shouldn't apologize, because they're
Airwave.
They're tropes. Airwave
I think Airwave is totally a get-the-girl slash... Well, it's not really... It's more a save-the-world story with a bit of... sort of get the girl thrown in. I mean, yeah, it gets to the point you break it down. Past that point, I started making really weird experimental games like Eternally Us, which is...
Well, Eternally Us is a... It's...
What is it?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Because it's a story about friendship and acceptance.
Yeah, I think the stories that I wrote after that really started focusing on just the main character. And,
yeah, it's not really get the girl or the whatever, because it's not a love... I mean, I guess you could say it is a love story, but it's not like...
It's not that type of love.
Right, exactly. It's a platonic friendship
love. It's a friendship love, yeah, but I think I have this real big problem with games is if I'm playing a game... And the main character's like, oh man, I must do it for honor's sake. I'm like, man, seriously, I do nothing for honor. Everybody I know is selfish, you know? There's always some reason that you do something, whether it's you want people to think you're good or whether it's, you know, there's always an ulterior motive, I think. Nobody goes, I'll sacrifice the rest of my life for honor. Yeah. You know, I really cannot relate to that. And that sounds really, like, bad and everything. But you find me people that do stuff for honor. It's a ridiculous reason for doing stuff.
The only game I can think of where I do stuff for honor is Quest for Glory, because honor is a stat that you can build up. And the only reason I do it is because...
It's a superficial thing in that case. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so me doing something for honor, I'd rather do something so that... For me, honor is more... an individual thing, like a beggar asks you for a coin, so you give him a coin because you're a nice person, but that's not doing a thing for honor. You're not going to go and save the whole world just because it's a nice thing to do. There's some ulterior motive.
Right.
I really can't relate to games that are like, oh, thee, thy, thou honor must be. I'm like, I can't relate to this. This is ridiculous. So yeah, that's a problem I really have. Whereas if it's someone like, you know, get the girl, I'm like, oh, I can totally relate to this, you know? And I recently wrote a review of Full Throttle that I was really thinking about Full Throttle, and there's something that really, really impressed me about the writing in Full Throttle is that you've got this whole cast of tough guys, like all the guys in Full Throttle are total like tough guys, and then when it came time to put girls into the game, the girls don't counterpoint the guys by being like these petite little things like, oh, you're the big hero, save me. Man, the girls in Full Throttle are even tougher.
Yeah.
They're like totally badass, man.
Yeah, they are.
So I really love that about Full Throttle is that it doesn't conform to this idea of because the guys are so tough, the girls have to be really like really feminine to sort of counteract them.
Yeah.
The girls counteract even better, in my opinion, by being just, man, absolute badasses. Like, fix your motorbike and then, you know, leader of the motorcycle gang, like, kick your ass, total absolute killers. I love that. That's awesome to me, you know? That's really unexpected and really, for me, that makes them so much more believable characters because it makes the guys being really tough seem much, much better justified in my opinion as well, because it stops them feeling so stereotypical. I mean, as I said, Ben Throttle is a total meathead, but he's an intelligent meathead, and he does what he has to do. You know, he might kick people's asses, but he's only doing it because that's what he has to do in order to follow what he knows he must do, which is look after his gang of bikers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, yeah, that
this is veering into a completely different topic of discussion.
It really is.
But yeah. I just wanted to point out that if you sit and analyze all the LucasArts games, none of the LucasArts games did the damsel in distress thing. All the female characters in the LucasArts games had varying levels of I guess damseliness or whatever you want to call it. But there was never actually a LucasArts game where the goal was save the girl, except Monkey Island 1, but then that got turned on its head when she comes and the big reveal is, oh, she Elaine had everything taken care of the whole time. And I mean, I guess you could say in Curse of Monkey Island, you know, Elaine is in distress because she's a gold statue for the whole game.
Yes.
But when you bring her back from being a gold statue, she clocks you in the face, which is like one of my favorite cutscenes in the game.
Elaine's another great character where she's like,
But I mean, even like in Day of the Tentacle, Laverne,
LucasArts characters.
Yeah, you know, Laverne is she takes care of herself. Sophia Hapgood can take care of herself.
Man, Laverne is like my favorite character ever, just because of her eyes.
Oh, I love her walk and her. I've got an anatomy final tomorrow.
She's kind of crazy, and I like that about her. She's easily my favorite Day of the Tentacle character.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Maggie in The Dig, I mean, even though she's flat and kind of boring, she's
definitely independent.
Yeah, she's independent, and she's smart. She learns the whole alien language, and she communicates with the alien.
Oh, well,
the alien.
She's smarter than Boss.
Well, anybody's smarter than Boss, dude.
These death crystals.
Boston. But even in Grim Fandango, like Mechie, like even though she goes off and Manny thinks that he has to save her, she's perfectly capable of taking care of herself too, and you know, she has her little plan for dealing with Domino and everything.
Well, I mean, you can also see it in like Carania. Look at Xanthia versus her boyfriend.
was Marco really her boyfriend though?
Yeah, there's a throwaway comment somewhere in the game where someone's, I think she was talking, you know, when you get to the island and you walk around and there's that other lady on the same island as you, and they're both it's kind of like this tongue in cheek thing where they're both looking for the same thing.
She
asks, and Xanthia makes some throwaway comment where she's like, "Oh yeah, I've kind of got a boyfriend, but he's being all weird," which is like, which is very true.
Well, he's more interested
at the end.
Oh, that's true. They do, but
yeah.
Well, he's more interested in playing with his hand than he is with Xanthia. So,
Xanthia,
Xanthia, I came to save you, Xanthia. Meanwhile, he's hanging from like a Venus flytrap. Yeah. But then, my CD drive just opened up on my laptop.
I heard that.
But meanwhile, then you've got Sierra games where, oh man, the female characters in the Sierra games are just like.
What about Rosella? Well, in King's Quest 4.
Okay, Rosella, fine. But Rosella, like, you first meet her tied up to a stake, getting hit by a dragon. And Valenice, the whole point of King's Quest 2 is to save her. And she's, like, the most cardboard cutout character there is. All she does in King's Quest 7 is cry and, like, go around being an idiot.
I think, but when you look at the inspiration for the King's Quest games, how much they draw from fairy tales.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be kind of betraying its roots if it didn't. And I think, King's Quest just seems totally derivative to me, which is why that sort of thing. But there's a lot of games where you can see them following the tropes really strongly like that.
Yeah, but then now that I think about it, they do have some games where you have, you know, like Laura Bow is she's kind of a blank slate in the first Laura Bow game, but she develops a personality in the second one, and she's definitely not just a namby-pamby damsel in distress sort of character. But anyway, we're stepping into Anita Sarkeesian territory, and we don't want to take that away from her. So let's go back to the talking about adventure game story tropes.
More sort of motivations for the story.
Tropes, motivations for the story, yeah. Because, I mean, that's the thing, like, if you have a game that's just a character study, which very few games do, where the motivation is just the character and what they want, it's tricky because you have to write a strong character. Because if you intend to do a character story where the character, the player doesn't feel anything for the character, it's difficult because you have to make the player want the character to achieve their goal if the story is just about the character achieving their goal, you know?
I think one of the things that always makes me want a character to achieving a goal is give them someone to hate, like really, really hate. Like if I'm in a game and I have a character that I really, really hate. Like, you've played Bully, right?
Sure.
Man, I hated Gary in that game. Like, I just... Man, I was like, I'm just going to find that punk and I'm going to kick his ass, you know? So that really... Because that's really a rise and fall story.
Yeah, no. Well,
Bully is like... There's even one chapter called The Rise and Fall.
Of Jimmy Hopkins, age 15. Right. Yeah.
Right. So in that, because they made like this character that's a total, like, he's just an asshole. Like, he betrays you and he sets you up. He does everything he can to just destroy your character completely. So, man, when it came to the final battle, like beating him, I was like, man, this is the best. I get to kick this little punk's ass, you know? So, yeah, I think you really need to have a character that either motivates them in a good way or a bad way to do something. You have to give them someone who they really don't want to disappoint, or that they just really just want to just, they just... Because we've all met people that we either look up to or we just despise, you know?
Sure.
So when you give a character someone like that, you can relate to that. It's escapism for the fact that you can go back and you can be like, man, when I was in high school, I should have done this. Now I'm going to do this.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think you really need to give them a supporting character. Like, I guess in your case, it would be more someone that they look up to, that they don't want to disappoint.
Right.
I think,
you make a very valid point, but I also think that you don't necessarily have to put all that on one character. I think you can have a supporting cast of different people that you can, like, because you can make it more, a little bit more complex if you have, or slightly more interesting if you have, you know, different characters that your main character has different interactions with. Like, you can have one character that they look up to, another character that, like, maybe they want to, I don't know, that they hate, another one that they sort of get on with, but then they don't, or something like that, and change different facets of their personality, or explore different facets of their personality by who they interact with.
Sure, I think most games have that, but I think there's still the main one or two characters that sort of push them where they go, you know?
Of course.
Once again, if you look at Bully, once again, there's the whole time he gets pushed by Gary, you know, into the good, into the bad. Everything he does is kind of prompted by this one character, and there's a lot of characters that he interacts with. I mean, it's a Grand Theft Auto game.
Yeah,
you definitely have this weird, quirky cast, but there's still this main driving force.
Right.
It's like the same in Vice City. You know, it's a friendship betrayal kind of setup that really works.
Sure.
Although I think Lance was definitely less hateable.
Yeah. Until
Lance was a. Lance was a cool guy until he turned into a bit of a douchebag.
Yeah, until the end when he's like, "No, Tommy, I sold you out. I sold you out." Best voice acting ever.
Well,
good on you, Tubbs.
Vance Dance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, hey.
But yeah, so I think in the case where we're talking about a character study, it's really about the supporting cast for me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of all the games, because I've not thought about this before, to be honest. This is totally new thinking for me. I'm trying to think of games that count as character studies. Mm. And Grand Theft Auto games somehow really count as that, because you don't try and save the world. Theft Auto 3, you're kind of after the girl, but
she's
a total bitch. And you're not really after her. That's just the thing that started. So
I would say Theft Auto 3 is probably the most character study, because of the fact that the character doesn't speak, so you kind of project your own motivations on him. Because, I mean, Tommy and CJ and Nico...
Tommy's a great character.
Yeah. They all have their own... No, I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying they already have personality and they have their own motives and their own attitudes and stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of just, you know, rise to the top sort of thing. I think it would be really interesting. I mean, there's certainly Grand Theft Auto games, like in Grand Theft Auto 4, all Grand Theft Auto games are kind of just, like, overcome the... overcome the odds and rise but to I the think top they, stories.
They all fit in a sort of rise and fall sort of thing. Like, you have major success and then it all starts going wrong. And then
you have high points and you have low points. But I'd be interested in seeing a Grand Theft Auto game where you start off as, like, a criminal kingpin and then you lose everything and then you kind of have to build your way up again.
Okay.
Or maybe that'd be nice. And you don't necessarily even have to get to the level where you were at before, but, like, you know, it'd just be, I don't know, it'd be
just redeem yourself a bit.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm trying to think of a game. I'm sure there's games that do that.
Well, Red Dead Redemption, sort of.
Kind of.
You
never really start playing as that guy.
Yeah, I mean, you were that guy at some point in life. But you
work your way back up to it, which is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, no, I think that'd be... See, the reason I've really lost interest in Grand Theft Auto games is because I've done that.
Yeah.
I've done the Rise and Fall and Rise story now a lot. And yeah, they seem to have run out of ideas. Yeah. That's kind of why I like Red Dead Redemption and Bully so much, is because they play with the setting so much more.
Yeah. But that's the thing, like, you don't really see that in adventure games.
No, you don't. Well, maybe it's time.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Because, I mean, Backdoor Man got pretty decent reviews and reception, and it was essentially just a character study, because there was no real driving force. I mean, there was a date with a girl that could go well, but it wasn't the full motivation of the guy's character. I mean, it was just
It could go really well.
Well, it could go really well, and it could go very wrong.
Yes, it could.
But yes.
I think it's for the best that we move on from that.
Yeah, great. I think that her teddy needed to be changed. Oh god, that was terrible.
That's too far.
That is too far.
But yeah, I think the biggest challenge you'll face is whether you can get characters, like players, to relate to your character. Because that's your driving force. There's no real motivation in your story from what I've played other than the motivation of let's do well, whereas
right.
Ben Jordan was really a save the world, get the girl story.
Well, Ben Jordan was a detective story first and foremost.
But it's still a save the world story when you wrap it all up.
It ended up being a sort of save the world story. Because it wasn't really... Yeah, it wasn't actually a threat. But whatever. Anyway, go play Ben Jordan. For something. It's difficult. It's difficult to talk about a Golden Wake without spoiling anything at this point.
It really is, yeah.
But I have to say that, like, that was one of the main things that I worked on, because when I first started and I was sending out really early builds just to kind of get a feel for stuff, a bunch of people gave me feedback, and Steve Poulton was one of the people who gave me some feedback, and he told me that he just couldn't really relate to Alfie as a character, because, I mean, I hadn't done a prologue yet, which kind of sets up his whole motive for wanting to succeed. And so it was just kind of like he gets off the train and he starts with his, you know, the first chapter. And it was true. Like, I hadn't really written... He was kind of bland. He just kind of reacted to or responded to stuff. So I figured, well, let me punch him up a little. So I kind of threw in some more... I gave him more of a personality. And recently I sent Andale a build to play, and he told me that one of the things that he enjoyed about it was that he really felt like Alfie had a personality, but he was actually having some trouble establishing a personality for his main character in the Samaritan Paradox, which I think his character in the Samaritan Paradox has a pretty obvious personality, but, you know, we're all self-critical about our games.
We sure are.
So, but it was good feedback, and it was positive. It made me feel better about my character. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be varying levels once I finally release the game. People who will say, you know, he really had a personality. Some people will say, oh, he was boring, whatever. But, you know, everyone's going to say it. But for what it is, I mean, I'm trying to make him relatable and still have his own unique personality. Because that was another thing, too. Like, I was really interested. I raved about Breaking Bad. And
yes,
I really wanted to watch Breaking Bad because I knew that it was a rise and fall story. I mean, the creator of Breaking Bad said that his goal with the show was to have a main character who started off as Mr. Chips who turned into Scarface.
Sure.
Which is kind of not as extreme, but kind of similar to what I wanted to do. in A Golden Wake. Like, I want the character to be completely at a different point. I mean, obviously in a Rise and Fall story, you have to go to extremes, or else it's not a Rise and Fall story. It's just kind of a trip on your shoelaces story.
Good day, bad day story.
Exactly. So you have to go to extremes, and it's difficult to pull that off. I mean, look at how many people complained in the Star Wars prequels. And I'm not a Star Wars fan. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. Not really even remotely kind of a little bit of a Star Wars fan. I mean, I didn't see the Star Wars movies until just a couple of years ago for the first time.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'd seen Empire and Return of the Jedi when I was like 6, but, you know, I hadn't seen...
Oh, there you go.
I hadn't seen Episode 4, and I hadn't seen any of the prequels.
So, that's crazy.
So I decided to just watch all of them. And what interested me, even though everyone was all boo-hoo about the prequels, I was most interested to see how they handled... The thing about the prequels that interested me, even though I knew they were going to be crappy, was the whole handling of how Anakin went from being Goody Two-Shoes to being Darth Vader. Because that's kind of a big change, you know?
Yeah, he's very dark by the end of the third episode.
Yeah,
But
the thing about the third episode was that they kind of just flipped the switch, and all of a sudden, okay, he's not nice anymore.
I'm evil.
Yeah, they didn't handle it very well at all.
No, it was very ham-fisted. I thought very heavy-handed.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I wanted to avoid. And yes. So that's basically the challenge, finding that line. And that's why I like Breaking Bad, because it did it in a very good way, you know. It establishes this guy, and then he kind of goes deeper and deeper into darkness. But then at the same time, you're like, well, it's realistic. I mean, I can see how this would happen. And then by the end of the show, by the end of the fifth season, you're just like, you're hating him, you know? You he's the villain of the show now. But at the same time, there's still that little... You remember how he used to be, and you're like, well, he kind of still shows shreds of that humanity that he lost. And so it's difficult, because he's the bad guy, clearly, but you still kind of care about him, you know? It's weird.
Okay. So I think a really big thing that you have to notice in adventure games, and all games, I guess, but mostly in adventure games, is how quickly everything happens. Like, if you look at the amount of things that happen during the playtime that you play it for, you have to really cram it full of crap in order to keep players' attention. Like, over the course of a 10-hour game, you might be in, like, 6 different cities, and you might have, you know, saved the world 16 times, you know? It's like, it's really like, I sat down the other day and I was talking to Dave about Blackwell, and we were just discussing it, and I was discussing the latest game, and over the course of like 2 or 3 nights, the amount of crap that Rosa goes through was just unbelievable. You know? I'm like, man, if one of those things happened in one of my week, I'd be like, man, this has been a really bad week, you know, this has been a really good week, whereas, you know, this is adventure game characters have tons of stuff happen to them in a very, very short period of time. And I think that's what adds drama. That's what adds urgency, because day-to-day life is pretty bland, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's no drama or tension in The Sims.
No, no.
Well, you know, so that's...
Until Bella Goth's ghost comes back to haunt you.
Yeah. But yeah, that's... I think that's what really makes a story quite powerful, is in a very short space of time, you know, have everything happen. A story really has to cut out the extra stuff that is part of everyday life. Like, you know, characters never go to the toilet, and they never stop and go, I'll have a meal.
Sure.
Except in King's Quest IV with the little 7 dwarves. I mean, but, you know, that's something people comment on a lot. Like, oh, man, when do these people eat? When do these people go to the toilet? But
yeah,
if you put that stuff in a game, then the player's going to be like, oh, man, this is boring. I want drama. I want excitement. So I think, to have a character study like it is, you have to have these dramatic changes happen in it. Well, I mean, it does happen in Golden Awake in a short period of time, because you've spread the story out over 14 years, and you're just showing little glimpses of this 14 years.
Exactly. So that's kind of an advantage, though, because it makes it slightly more believable. Because if you set up that this character, that something happens to this character at this point, and then you fade out and fade in however many years later, and you see where they are now, you can kind of be like, okay. I mean, look at Grim Fandango. Manny goes from...
4 years.
Yeah, 4 years. And, you know, from the end of what cutscene where he's mopping up the the laundromat or the thing, the automat, he goes from that to being the owner of the casino. And you don't know how he did it, but it's believable that he did it because of who he is and what they've established in the first chapter. Right. Likewise with, you know, how he goes from, you know, being a stowaway on a ship or a cook on a ship to being the captain in a year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it worked in Grim Fandango, which,
yes,
to an extent, Grim Fandango was kind of a character study too, because Manny's personality kind of changed.
Manny starts. Yeah, it's kind of a. It's a very up and down story, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Manny always.
It's not a rise and fall story.
Yeah, it's a rise and fall and rise and fall and rise and fall, because he really, in the first three chapters, he always ends up. At the beginning, he's kind of. He's doing
down
well.
On his luck.
Well, he's down on his luck, but he's doing well at the beginning of each chapter. But then at the end of each chapter, he's really down on his luck. Because, I mean, at the first,
yeah.
The beginning of the first chapter, he's in a dead-end job and everything, but he's got a job.
Yeah.
Even though he's stuck in a rut. And then at the end of the first chapter, you know, he's, like, stuck in Rubikava, and he's mopping up floors. And then in the second chapter, he's got this great casino and everything and whatever, but he's still pining after Mechi. And then the end of the second chapter, he's on the boat going who knows where. And then the third chapter, the third chapter is kind of where everything goes to hell.
Yes, it does.
Man, I really need to play Grim Fandango again. I'm getting nostalgic.
You've been talking about it for
it.
Ages.
I know. I've been talking about it for like 4 years.
Mm.
Man, you know what I should really do? I should play Grim Fandango over the span of 4 years. Just play 1 year.
It would have been a lot easier than just going, oh man, I should really play Grim. Well, New Year's resolution, dude.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Play through the first chapter in January.
Yeah.
And then next year, the January time. I seriously doubt that once you start playing, you'll be able to stop.
Yeah. No, I'll have to play it on Day of the Dead, so it's appropriate.
Like me with Full Throttle.
Yeah.
I started it up the other day just to grab a screenshot, and I was like, ha ha ha. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's weird.
So yeah. I think
I mean,
really,
it's hard to do.
You really gotta have these extremities in your story in a short space of time, or people are going to lose interest.
Yeah, but see, another thing that was cool about Grim Fandango was that it didn't fill in the blanks for you. Like, you just jump from many not knowing anybody to like knowing everybody in Rubikava, and like there's, you know, it's just like, okay, here's so and so, and you look at them and it's like, oh, it's so and so, it's Carla, or it's whatever, and you're like, oh, hey, Manny, how come I never see you anymore? Hey, come by. They don't talk like that, but.
Well, that really, I think a lot of that stuff is self-explanatory, whereas, because everybody knows how someone works themselves up gradually to a position, it's the fall that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
That's true.
It's the fall that's tense and dramatic, and, you know, that's where the climaxes lie, is how you get out of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyone can go gradually from a room-pushing person. That's not interesting.
No.
It's not dramatic.
Not unless you're playing Railroad Tycoon or something.
Man, don't knock Railroad Tycoon.
I was just saying that those games, sim games,
but those games aren't story focused.
No, they're
you
not.
Know?
But, you know.
Those games are management focused, and that you make your own success there. You're not relying on a story to make success for you.
Right.
So, yeah.
I feel like we have to have like a separate off-air discussion with actual spoilers. After this podcast.
We probably do. There's obviously these things that have been weighing on your mind a bit, and I can see why, because you're trading in territory where you could make either a really good game or a really boring game, but also fall into the real trap of just making an average game that's just average, you know. And I think that's usually the saddest thing, is if you see a game that's just average and it doesn't fail miserably
and it doesn't
succeed amazingly.
It doesn't reach its full potential. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a real problem that you see with games.
I should mention that the reason that this has been weighing on my mind lately is because one of the things I did while I was at the cafe this week was play through my game from start to as far as I had gotten, you know, in one go, which I hadn't done for a really long time. And it didn't leave me feeling, oh, this game is boring. But at the same time, it kind of made me think, well, how is someone who's not me going to respond to this, you know?
Yeah.
So
I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic, and it's not something I'd really thought about much, so I'm glad you brought it up.
Hmm. So, yeah. It's a thing.
So we've kind of moved here from all adventure games have fall into the same sort of category, and mine doesn't. So how can we make a rise and fall story work? How can we make a character study work and be dramatic and interesting and rewarding and engaging, yet at the same time not be full of ridiculous tropes like honor?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I mean, as an that's the thing, you have to strike the balance, because ultimately you're controlling this character. So if you come to despise this character, you don't want them to succeed, you know. Yep. So like, if they're like, oh well, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna kill a guy, you know, like, you know, actually another thing that I've implemented into A Golden Wake is options and decisions and how to respond to people. Which you saw and enjoyed recently.
Yes, I did.
But to an extent, it has an effect on things, but also it kind of doesn't, because there's certain key moments in the story that you can either... I mean, it doesn't have the exact same effect, but you get more story based on the not to spoil, but there's a character who you have an interaction with towards the middle of the story who it's kind of implied that there's this sort of resentment between the main character and this character. And the character's like, well, look, come on, stop beating around the bush. Just tell me. And you can either just make up an excuse or let him have it, you know? And
sure.
If you let him have it, then you understand more of the reasoning behind it. If you make him an excuse, you just kind of, you know...
Chickens out.
Exactly. And it's essentially the same, because that's the last interaction you have with that character. But as a player, whether or not you kind of, you know, see why your main character is going to do this is...
I see this as more... We were talking about the other day where you've got... rewards, you get rewarded by stuff in games, and sometimes story can be a reward. I did that a lot in Piss. Well, not a lot, but I did that a fair bit in Piss, you know. There's stuff in Piss, like, there's two bits that I guess I'll bring up. And one of them is when you go, like, the whole goal at one point of the game is to get your money back from a guy who killed himself and took the... Well, I can't even remember if he killed himself. I wrote the story and I can't remember, but he basically took your coins to the Styx with him so that he could pay the ferryman to get across the Styx, and you can track him down and you can get those gold coins off him, or you can choose to let him have the gold coins out of pity, because when you find out exactly who he is and why he did it, he's a pretty pitiful character, you know. So that changes nothing in the story, whether you let him keep the coins. You know, that's just a decision that has no effect on the story at all, other than what Moira says to him. You know, and I like the way the story goes either way from there, because it's the same story. It's just she makes a decision, and a decision doesn't have to be this big moral consequence thing. Sometimes it can just be like, you know what, screw it. I got to make a choice. And I often get paralyzed by choice in games. I remember The Witcher especially. I stopped playing for a while because I just can't make this decision because I know that there's going to be huge consequences. Whereas I like sometimes choices don't always have big consequences. Another point in Piss, you have to sacrifice one of your memories. You play as an amnesiac character, so you don't have many memories. And so I tried to get across the idea that the memories that you do have are kind of precious. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have many of them. And there's one point where you have to sacrifice one of three memories, you know. And one of the memories, which is the one that most people chose, is the memory that you most expect Moira to forget and choose to forget. But if you do forget them, you miss out on a pretty big plot explanation for how it all got started. So no matter what you choose to forget, I think you miss out on something. Mm-hmm. You can either choose to forget the bad guy, I guess, in a sense, or you can, well, without spoiling anything, I guess I say quotation marks the bad guy, or you can choose to forget the person that loves you, or you can choose to forget a sort of father figure but not quite father figure. So, you know, I wanted to make this thing where you make this choice, and no matter what you do, you forget someone important in some way to your past.
Which is the one that most people choose, out of curiosity.
Obviously, the bad guy.
Really?
Yeah, everyone chooses that guy.
I think I chose the love interest.
Really? Okay. Interesting. But yeah, so I wanted to make it so the story changes. The story stays exactly the same no matter what, but you lose a little bit of your past or potential future depending on what you choose to forget.
Okay.
So yeah, and I never really. At one point, I was going to be really heavy-handed on it, and have, like, if you choose to forget the love interest, have the love interest show up near the end of the game, and be like, oh, hey, you know, I'm here, we can do this together, and you'd be like, oh, who are you? I don't remember you, and be, like, really obvious with it, but instead I chose, like, I thought, nah, probably more powerful if I just imply it, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I really wanted to work with the idea of choice, but I think a lot of the time it gets really heavy-handed, like, you know, option A is the good option.
Right.
So yeah, I think in your case, trying to have something like this where it's just the whole reason for doing something is finding out more of the backstory really works, in my opinion, especially in a character study like that.
Yeah. There's also another bit that I have that it also doesn't really affect the story, because the outcome is the same, because it's an event that kind of is a wake-up call, I guess, for lack of a better term, for the main character. And I just actually recently implemented it, where you encounter a character later on in the story who you encounter early on in the story, and the first encounter you have with that character is not so great. And there's two ways it can end. Either, you know, you can either talk the character out of what they're doing and have a good outcome, or you can just kind of finish with what the character's doing and have not so great outcome. So you're left with either a positive or a... Well, not positive, but you're left with either a negative impression of this character or just a neutral, I guess, impression of this character. And this character comes back later on at a pretty dramatic point in time, and you have the option of warning them about what they're getting themselves into or not. And the result's the same either way, but you as the player can kind of make this conscious decision. And actually, I mean, I'm toying with the idea for the end game, like all the... Well, not toying with, I'm planning on implementing it so that the choices you made throughout the game have an effect on the end game in a way. So
like Fallout.
Yeah, exactly. So if you made moral choices throughout the game, you'll have a different result than if you made sort of immoral choices or less honest choices. I mean, essentially the story stays the same, but you can kind of be more towards the darkness or the light, I guess. Okay. Not to go cliche RPG on you, but you're not gonna grow horns or get a halo by the end of the game.
Okay,
is what I'm
so
saying.
I can be chaotic good by the end if I want.
Yeah, sure. Exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that. Yeah, I don't know. I think you're following up with some of the ideas you started with Backdoor Man, where it's very much about choices. The gameplay. Yeah. The interesting thing in Backdoor Man, I guess, is choices. And I guess the best sort of example I can think of to look at this, apart from the Fallout games and Arcanum, is probably Conquest of the Longbow sort of idea, where, you know, but you make these choices through the game, and then you get to the end of the game and the game's like, well, this is the result of your actions, which I think is compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you can have way different results. I mean, you can either end up marrying Maid Marian and living happily ever after, or
Marian.
Yeah. Or you can end up, you know, with Marian dead and all your men, you and your merry men, accused of treason and hung.
Not so merry men anymore.
Nope.
So yeah, I think that's a good, and I think that's good because I think that's an interesting idea that I'd like to see more of in games.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot easier to play with in Backdoor Man because it was such a short game, and
that's right. Yeah.
Everything.
You can.
But, yeah.
It's the best thing about Backdoor Man was everything was really punchy, and if you wanted to see a different playthrough, a different ending, you can just fire it back up, and you've only, you know, it's another 10 minutes, and you're like, hey,
Exactly.
So
it was really more a choose your own adventure thing, but it was kind of a precursor character study experiment sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then again, I've always said that A Golden Wake is a spiritual prequel to Black Doorman, so.
Yes, you have. So yeah.
And no, it'll be fairly apparent once the game's out, I think, that they both are very much related.
I think if you can work it in as well as it works in games like, you know, I don't want to mention Heavy Rain again because we talked about it way too much.
No.
That's one thing that kind of disappointed me a bit about Heavy Rain is that, yes, you can go and do all this stuff, but the end result's still a crap story.
Yeah.
But I think if Conquest of the Longbow is anything to go by in that sort of game, I think you're doing something interesting that deserves at least a try.
Yeah. But, I mean, although Conquest of the Longbow isn't... It's Save the King, I guess. Because Robin Hood's just trying to go through all this stuff to...
Kind of, but it is still very much... Yeah, it's got that same idea, I guess, of where you get to make these choices and you get to see how your choices affect the world around you and affect your destiny at the end. So it's still a character study.
I always felt bad for the dumb merry man who, you know, there's a couple of points in the game where there you kind of have to listen to the merry men and I feel so stupid calling them the merry men.
It's such a stupid name.
It really is. But anyway, you're listening to your gang of guys, which is just a stupid
gang of guys. Merry men.
Yeah.
There's something about alliteration.
Yeah, it really is. Blokes. Band of blokes, yeah.
Sorry, continue. Your flock of fellas.
what's a word for a group of things that starts with a D?
A collective noun for D?
Yeah.
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
I can't think of one either. That's probably for the
best.
Let's
move on.
Yes. But anyway, there's a couple of points in the game where you have to listen to their ideas for how you should proceed. And, you know, some plans are better than others. But then there's just this one guy who's dumb, and his plans are always so out in left field.
Well, like, it was the 1990s.
It's like, there's a bunch of guys coming down the road, and, you know, Friar Tuck's like, we should use the element of surprise and ambush them. And Little John's like, well, we should use our resources and brute force them. And then dumb guy's like, damn, we should get a bunch of wild boars and chase them out of the road.
Let's dress up as chicken.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
That was the 1990s. They're like playing with stereotypes, you know?
But what's actually funny is if you choose his terrible plan, it's like they show you the result and it's like, that was a terrible plan. Why did you do that? I always loved that. That's one of the things that made that game so endearing to me.
Good.
So, yeah. Yes, good.
Okay. Do you have any other concerns we should address as a collective?
About games or in general?
Oh, well.
Because I have this rash... Well, no, I guess. No, that's a lie. Not really. I think I've aired out all my worries for this podcast. Good. What about you?
No, I'm good.
Okay, good. Well then,
I'm worried that my cat purred right into the microphone about 3 minutes ago.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Okay, good.
I worried that the fart that I did was recorded on the microphone about 10 minutes ago.
Podcast. Let's keep it that way.
That's why I'm worried. All right. Well, good.
Well, I think that was an interesting discussion. I'm glad you brought that to light because I hadn't been thinking about it, and now I am. So you've given me some food for thought, and hopefully our listeners. Hello, listeners.
Good. Hello, listeners. So, this is our podcast for this week. I've just realized I haven't pimped our Twitters in like 5 episodes, so I should probably
What's going on? Let's do it.
I don't know. All right. So if you like what you hear and you like us and you want to hear us talk about stuff that may or may not have to do with game design or usually has to do with old DOS games or just random thoughts.
Yeah, there's a lot of everything.
Yeah, there is. You can follow me at Grundislav Games.
Yes, and I am at Ben_304. Hello.
Yes, and if you
want to... And there's also a Blue Cup Tools podcast.
Yeah, there's a Blue Cup Tools podcast that you can follow if you want the latest update of the episode, which is at BCT_podcast. And, yeah. So next week, I think we might have an interview on our podcast.
Sounds good to me.
Assuming that we can get said interviewee who has expressed interest. So stay tuned. And if not, we'll just have a regular old
episode. Actually, we've been talking about having this person on for like a year or more.
Yeah, we have. Well, we'll see what happens. Anyway.
We'll see what happens.
Anyway, this has been our podcast. Thank you for listening. And tip your bartender on the way out.
Goodbye.
Bye.